Good morning, good morning. Good morning, good morning. Now, today is, I think, you know, in a way, the last big lecture. This is, you know, really important material. And it's not the end of statistics, but it's one of the main conclusions of what we've been doing. So next week it'll be more discussion, working on practical problems, on data, on newspaper reports, with some statistical, with some new ideas, but basically this is the final sort of main idea. So this is really important. Okay, so we're going to talk about hypothesis testing, the idea of trying to decide what is true from the data we have. We always just have limited data, but we want to make bigger conclusions. We want to make inferences. So this thing of inference, which is it's going from the particular, which will be a sort of sample, and trying to say something about the general, which would be a population. So we do a survey and we want to know something about a country. Or we, you know, just measure things on the class and we want to say something about people in general. So this is the difficult bit. And one of the big, we do this, the route for this, which is quite nice, is through a probability model. We use probability theory to make this route by considering these as random variables coming from a distribution with a parameter theta. You know, all the Greek letters are used in order to do this really important thing. So that's why I think this subject is very important. So the technical language is that we generally want to test a hypothesis. We call this a null hypothesis. A null hypothesis. Give it the notation H0. And that's something that we want to test. Like there is no association between eating. There's no association between smoking and dying early. We might want to test that. Now, that has been rejected. We know that people who smoke die early, tend to. Not definitely, but tend to. So we test something, and a null hypothesis is some simplifying assumption, usually that some parameter takes on some value, often zero, like no association, or there's no difference between groups. It's a simplifying assumption. And often we might want to test it with the alternative hypothesis, actually I haven't written that in, which we usually call H1, is the alternative, which might be, for example, that theta is bigger than theta naught, so that there's a positive association between two things, or men are taller than women, or something like that, on average. And we want to see whether our observed data provides strong evidence against H naught. You know, do they say H naught? Can we reject it? Usually for this we calculate some test statistic, some function of the data, often an estimate, but not always, often an estimate of the quantity, but not always. It can be a more general statistic, where high values indicate evidence against H naught. Well, later it might also be low values, but we'll assume at the moment it's high values indicate evidence against H naught. And this is the crucial thing. We measure the evidence by saying how likely, if H naught were true, it would be to get something as extreme as what we observed. So it's a very odd logic. You have to think backwards. You have to say, if H naught were true, is what I observed unlikely? Okay, it's a very strange thing. So let's draw that. Basically, we say, help, thank you. I need looking after. I need lots of looking after. Well, usually we've got some parameter here, and here's theta naught. Here's the value that we want to test. But we observe something up here. Our estimate is up there. Does that mean that this is wrong, that this is untrue? And how we do it is to create a distribution around here that says this, okay, this is our test statistic here. This is the probability distribution for t of x given h naught. Where we'd expect this to be if this were true. And then if we observe something up here, we say, well, this looks like this can't be true then. And how we measure the discrepancy is to look at that tail area. The chance of observing something even more extreme than what you did. And then the logic is that either something very rare has occurred, or B, H naught is false. And if this is really small, we're happier with this than that. So that's the logic. You see, it's a sort of strange logic that we get supplied. And that's applied to the Higgs boson, it's applied to medical trials, it's applied to everything. We use this logic. H naught is false. So that's the idea. So, and if this tail area, the usual thing is to say, if this is less than 0.05, we say it's statistically significant at the 5% level, if this is less than 0.05. Now, it may be very small, it may be less than 0.001, it may be less than 0.00001. I think the Higgs boson had five zeros in front of it before they declared it as a discovery. They need to have five or six zeros. We'll check that next week. And because they observed something out here. Yeah, about there. It's five standard deviations. They observed something five standard deviations out there. So the Higgs boson is there. And then they said, they observed that, and so this is so strange that there must be something there. We must have discovered something. Is that okay? Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I don't blame you. It's difficult. It's really difficult. This is one of the most difficult things there is. So it's just a logical problem. It is really difficult. But with practice, it starts not being so bad. Okay, these are some important notes. Actually, let's do an example first before we come to the important notes. We observe in the 18 females in this room, 14 could roll their tongues like that. So 14 out of 18. Is that evidence that it's more than 50-50? Or is that just chance? So, does that say, the majority, let's presume that the women here, a random sample of all women in the world, does that mean that the majority of women can roll their tongues? From our little sample, 14 out of 18. Is that evidence that the majority can? We have to assume they're a random sample. How do we do that? Well, the first thing we do is to say, okay, let's assume that it's 50-50. The true probability is 0.5. So we assume the thing we're trying to disprove. That's the really tricky bit. Okay, let's assume if it were true, what would we expect the count to be? Well, it would be binomial, with denominator 18 and p equals 0.5, that's how many people, women in the class, we would expect to be able to roll their tongues if the true proportion, the true sort of rate, risk, chance, was 0.5, would expect it to look like that. Now, we actually observed that data point. So it's out in the tail. It's quite a long way. It's not in the middle. We didn't observe 8, 9, 10. We observed 14. We think, that's really either something quite surprising has happened, or this is wrong. This is not the right distribution. And how do we measure the surprise? We count these areas. recount how likely it was to observe something as extreme as what we did. Does that sound reasonable? Yeah. Is it? Yeah. We don't look at the height. It's interesting. We look at the whole area. We look at the area as extreme as what we did. Okay, so we can do that quite easily in R. We can just count. D by norm gives you these heights. D by norm function. You'll do this in the practical. So D by norm with n equals 18, p equals 0.5, and this is going to add them up between 14 and 18. So it's quite nice. That will just add up that one, that one, that one, that one, and that one. And we get p equals 0.015. So there's only 1.5% chance of getting something as extreme if it really was 50-50. So that suggests, whoa, something, either something rare has occurred or it's not 50-50. And since 1.5 is less than 0.05, we might say, okay, that's evidence that there is an excess. It's not 50-50, it's more than 50-50. So does that seem a sort of logic? So that's the logic. We create a distribution like this called the null distribution and check if we're in the tails or not. There are other ways to do it, as we'll see, with confidence intervals, but that's the basic idea. Okay, some notes. Look, a lot of notes, but these are important, so worth knowing these and referring back to them. They're important. We may be interested in low values. In other words, we might be interested in values such as there as well, not just there. And this is known as a two-sided test against the alternative that theta does not equal theta naught. And that's in fact fairly standard, that we're interested in either way. And the usual technique then to do that test is to calculate the one-sided p-value and double it. It's an odd thing. So we calculate this value and then we double it and compare that to 0.05. Yeah? Question at the back? Not just the ordinate. Ah, yeah, that's a really difficult point to answer, because it does seem natural. Why not just use the actual point? Why use something more extreme? It's quite a big philosophical issue. Many statisticians say you shouldn't use the tail. You should just use the probability of what you observe. One of the problems is that if this was a very big number, every one of these would be small. You end up with a very flat distribution. And so the probability of what you observe is always very small. So it's quite difficult to calibrate it. People have suggested using this and comparing it to the average probability, the average ordinate. So in a way, that's one of the most controversial things. If you do a Bayesian perspective, you don't use the tail area. You just use this. So it's a good point, and one where it's almost convention. Yeah, and it's quite an argument. It's a thing that people argue about. Statisticians argue a lot about this kind of thing. Yeah. Are there any other questions? Not so horrible questions. That's a nasty question. Anything else? Okay, well, you're going to be doing quite a lot of this. So you double this. So this 0.015, in fact, you double it to give a two-sided p-value. And that is still less than 5%. So you could say this is significant at the 5% level. This is significant evidence. Not very powerful. You'd want it like that. If you wanted to be really sure, you'd want p less than 0.001, which would be out here somewhere. So it's not. It's only about here. So it's not very powerful evidence, but it's quite powerful evidence. Okay. Now, this is the other way to do it. The other way to do it is, instead of calculating this, we instead, and this might seem more intuitive, take our estimate here, this is our estimate here, and put a 95% interval around it, like we did yesterday. And then, if that doesn't include here, we say it's significant at the 5% level. Now, that might seem more intuitive, I think. We estimate the value, And if this isn't in the interval, we say, oh, well, we don't believe this, we'll reject it. So I think the confidence interval approach is actually more intuitive, and it's correct. So you can do it this way as well. 95% interval does not contain zero. This is essentially equivalent to saying P less than 0.05. So that's another way to do it. Both ways to do it, and we'll see both of them. They're both going on.
Basically, because we said our theta naught to be zero, I think.
Yes, yeah, that should be theta naught. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we should. Sorry, very good. I'll try to remember to change that. That's just theta naught. It's usually zero, but not always. Because here it was 0.5, for example. So not always. Yeah, thank you. Software will often give you one star for 0.05, and two stars for 0.01, and three stars 0.001. R does this. It's not in reporting. This is considered not very good. In good scientific reporting, gives you the exact p-value, not just one, two, or three stars. But it is used quite a lot, particularly in psychology and other areas. They use one, two, and three stars. Okay, two little bits of philosophy. Just because something is not statistically significant, it doesn't mean the null hypothesis is true. So if this wasn't rejected, say this interval came down to here, I couldn't say this was false, but it doesn't mean that it is true. We're left in that sort of intermediate zone, that just because we can't reject 0.5 does not mean it is 0.5. We're in a state of, we don't know. You know, there's this intermediate state. Yeah. So, not rejecting H naught does not equal accepting H naught. Now that's very important, and it's a big mistake that is often made in medical papers. Climate change. Climate change. People do it. This is something that daily newspapers do. Newspapers that don't believe in climate change look at a temperature record like that. They fit a line, H naught, no increase. They test that. They find that P is greater than 0.05. And so therefore, they say there's no climate change. That's what the Daily Mail in the UK has said. Because over the last few years, the temperature has not gone up significantly. They just do it over a few years, and they declare no climate change. And that is making this with the Daily... Well, I'll try to find the quote. It's the Daily Mail in the UK. Terrible, terrible. They completely misunderstood what it's about. So just because you can't reject doesn't mean it's not there. So this was wrong. Okay, I'll try to find this one. We could discuss it next week. Climate change statistics. Very controversial. The other thing is that we'll do this next week as well. If we do lots of tests, if we look at this, keep on testing, we'll find something that is significant. And I got some good jokes about that. So we'll do that next week. Right. Okay. So just remember those and refer back to them. They're very important. Okay. Yes. So this is some R. There's a nice function, prop test, we'll be using a lot in R. Now, you can use this in two ways. You can use it just to test a single proportion, 14 out of 18, against a null hypothesis, P equals 0.5. Here we are, the data, and then it repeats the data so you can check it. Data is 14 out of 18, the null probability 0.5, and it gives you a two-sided p-value, 0.034. So it's very close to the one we got. They used a slightly different method. There's usually about six different ways to calculate a p-value, using all sorts of different continuity corrections, all sorts of approximations and different things. So there's no single correct p-value. Usually lots of different, it should be, the different ways should not give very different results. But there's always multiple ways to calculate them. Which is, that's why mathematicians don't like statistics. Because there's no single answer. That's why mathematicians hate statistics, because there's no single answer. It's, well, it's about there. Close enough, yeah. Yeah, well, you have to be happy with that. If you're a real mathematician, you don't like this at all. All right, or the other way, the nice thing about this prop test, it gives you for free the 95% interval for this probability. Which you notice does not include 0.5. So we can immediately say, it only just excludes it, which is what you'd expect, because that's only just less than 0.05. So it just excludes it, so we can just say 0.05. It gives us the sample estimate as well. So a very useful function, prop.test. And we'll see it, you can also use it for comparing two proportions. We'll talk about the chi-squared test in a minute. Is that okay? You're going to be using this? Very neat, very good, does it all for you. In days gone past, you would have to do all of this by hand. So think yourself lucky. I think for this, 0.05 is not very strong. So we could say there's, usually people use words like there's significant evidence against H0. They wouldn't say it's absolutely, H0 is definitely wrong. They would want to be a lot more confident. So there's some words that people use. That's why when you're discovering new laws of physics, 0.05 is hopeless. They would never, ever say anything. They want 0.0000001 before declaring a new law of physics. You want to be, this doesn't matter too much. But in clinical trials for new drugs, they tend to want 0.05, but twice. They do two studies. If you want to get a new drug on the market, a new drug for any treatment, you need to do an experiment which gives you 0.05, and then you need to do another completely independent experiment which also gives you 0.05. So in a way, the joint p-value is 0.05 times 0.05 is point, quite small, 0.0025. Yeah. So that's how drugs work. They don't accept a single trial, because this could be wrong. This could be wrong. One time in 20, this is going to be wrong. So it could be wrong. So it's not very strong evidence. So, okay, this is a very good point. We'll come back to this. You know, this is not a perfect method, particularly when you do lots of them. Okay, back to this one. I apologize for the bad code yesterday, but I've corrected it, I hope, and it's all there in the file. So we fit a line. We took out this point here. And we get a nice line going through the height, showing that people, taller people, have bigger hands. And then when you fit it, when you do it, and if you didn't do it yesterday, you do it today, you get output like that, which is fairly, not very clear. So first of all, I wanted to explain this output. This one is the gradient, the estimated gradient, 0.116. So it's the gradient of this line. And what it says, for every centimeter taller, the average hand span goes up 0.116. So that means for 10 centimeters, it goes up about 1.2. Yeah, so 10 centimeters taller, and your hand is on average about that much bigger. Yeah, that seems fairly reasonable, doesn't it? Yeah. So that's that gradient. And there it is, 0.116. It's got a standard error, 0.03, roughly. So let's say, very roughly, I should carry it around my neck. What have I done with it now? No, it fell down, right, okay. Why don't I just carry it like that? Then I wouldn't. So we got a gradient, is about 0.12, and the so you consider this as my test statistic, and my standard error is about 0.03. So very roughly, we can then say that if I want to test whether the gradient is zero or not, I've got an observation here, 0.12. The standard error is 0.03. And what, first of all, this is the ratio between the two. That is that divided by that. It's called a t-value. People also call it a z-statistic or whatever. It's the way, it's how many, if you think of it, it's how many standard errors this is away from here. So this is, if I look at this in standard errors, S. This is about four standard errors away from this null value. And we say this is known as would be a four sigma result. And again, for the Higgs boson, they wanted a five sigma result. Or was it six sigma? I can't remember. We'll check that. They discuss their significance in terms of how many sigmas it is away. So it's that ratio. And it turns out the probability of getting something that as extreme as that, greater than the modulus of that, is about 0.0008. So if I looked at the distribution of the gradient under the null hypothesis, this would be 0.00004, and I double it because I'm also interested in observing something as extreme the other end. So I calculate that tail area. I'm going to get you to do that, and double it, and that's tiny. It's tiny. So there's a very small chance of observing such an extreme gradient, either as big as this or as big as minus it, if there really is no relationship between height and hand span. So we say we can be 99.99% confident there's a relationship. Just from this small sample, in the whole, if you're assuming you are a random sample, we're 99.99% confident there is a relationship. So we can be really... Yeah, that's good evidence, that. That's very good evidence. It, by default, it assumes zero for this, and in fact zero for these, for this as well. But this is a bit meaningless, zero, because this depends on where you draw the axis. But it assumes, it automatically tests no relationship. Yeah. Not quite, it's the gradient, it's the B. It's not quite the correlation. So it's the gradient B. It's related to the correlation, and you would get the same p-value if you tested the correlation. I should have asked for that. Yeah, because this is exactly the same as testing for a correlation, whether the correlation is zero, and you get exactly the same p-value. Slightly different statistic, but this should be exactly the same if you test the correlation. Yes. Yeah. It gives you the two-sided. See, it gives you the probability of observing something either as big as this or as less than minus it as well. And it's nice. It does tell you the probability greater than the modulus of t, it's telling you. So it does warn you that it's looking for both big and small, and so it doubles this one-sided p-value. So it warns you, but it's quite clear. Now, the other way to do it, just before we stop, the other way to do it is to calculate confidence intervals. So there's this lovely function where, having fitted a line, if I just go conf int, it gives me, by default, if I don't tell it otherwise, a 95% interval. And we see that this is well outside zero. I estimate the true gradient is between 0.06 and 0.17. The observed gradient is in the middle of this, well outside zero. But I can change the level. I could ask for a 99.99% confidence interval, and that just excludes zero. It's a 99.99%. And you see, so this is down to 0.005%, the top 99.95%, and it just excludes zero. So that's, and that fits the p-value. Remember, the p-value was less than 0.0001. Okay, so I'll let me stop there, and then let's have a break, and we'll come back. And the exercises are running through these things, just checking them all as well. Okay, so we'll come back afterwards. And I'm going to give you get your brains ready. When you come back, you're going to do a memory test. Get your brains working. This again is just a slide for you to refer back to say what to do when you get output like that. This is typical output from a package. It gives you an estimate and a standard error. Well, what you do, so you've got an estimate theta hat with some standard error root v. So the rule, first thing, is an approximate 95% confidence interval is the estimate plus or minus 1.96 or 2 root v. So all I need do is to, if I wanted a very rough confidence interval, would be to take that and add on 2 of those and subtract 2 of those, and I get a confidence interval. So that's the first one. The other thing is a standardized test statistic. When you're testing some null value theta naught, is theta hat minus theta naught divided by the square root of v. And that is just this. Because this is testing naught, theta naught equals naught. So it's that minus naught divided by that gives you 4.3452. So that is the test statistic. And it may be called a t value, but it's also also called a z statistic, because if h naught is true, this should be an observation from a standard normal 0.1 distribution. So if z is between minus 2 and 2, that means it's not significant. So any value of z between minus 2 and 2 is not evidence against the null hypothesis. Now, how do I measure that evidence? If I've got a z here, say, I calculate that area, but I also do minus z and calculate that area. So when I'm doing a two-sided test, it's rather strange. If I observe this, I calculate the probability of getting something more extreme than that or more extreme of minus that. So in other words, it's the probability that z is greater than the modulus of the observed value. Or t is greater than modulus of t. This is what r will say. So what I do, there's two ways to look at that. You see, one way to look at that is twice the minimum of phi of z and phi of minus z. There's lots of ways to describe this. So if z was up here, phi of z would be all this area. That would be a huge number. So then I should calculate phi of minus z, this small one, and double it. So it's twice the smallest tail area. It's slightly confusing, this. It is very confusing. And also remembering that phi of minus z, this value, is just 1 minus phi of z. So I could also write this as min phi of z 1 minus phi of z. Maybe that way is clearer, I don't know. They're both the same thing. Basically, it's the small number. You don't want 0.97 or something like that. So suppose I had some estimate t with standard error equals 3 with standard error 1.7. I want to test whether it comes from a distribution with mean 0. I just calculate this statistic, t minus 0 divided by s. Calculate phi. P norm in R is the phi function. P norm will give me the tail area to the left of that value. So p norm, remember that. Now, I know that phi of, and just phi of minus z equals 1 minus phi. So if I do the p-value is the minimum of phi and 1 minus phi, and I get 0.078. So it's not significant at the 5% level. So that's a bit of standard code, and that's what, for example, that's being done for you, that p-value is being done for you. But if you have to do it yourself, that's what you do. And I give you that code, it's in the file for the practical. Okay, is that all right? You get some practice at this. And again, this is to refer back to, useful to refer to. We've done that. Ah, right, memory test. Have you all got good memories? I'm going to test your memory, okay? But we want to, I wanted to collect some data. So I want to collect some data, which we can analyze in an hour. We should be able to analyze it in less than an hour. We should be able to analyze this data if the tutors will help. Okay, so what... I've explained it to Adrian. I'll explain it to you. What I'm going to do, could you take a clean sheet of paper, a blank sheet of paper and a pen? What I'm going to do... Now, I'm going to read out some numbers, which I'm going to get from my phone. I'm going to read out phone numbers. I'm going to read out phone numbers. You don't do anything except focus. I'm going to wait for 10 seconds, and then you've got to write that number down. Possibly correctly. Now, there's no prize. There's no marks. Don't worry. But don't cheat. Write it down like this. Don't, no. No, no looking at anybody else. No, no, cover it up. Be like real school children, sort of writing it down like that. No cheating. This is a real experiment. Now, I'm going to start off with fairly easy, and then it's going to get more difficult. Because this is a scientific experiment to find out when people start finding it difficult. Now, I think, you know, you're a bright lot, so I hope this will work. I hope you don't get them all right. I'm going to make them so difficult that you won't get them all right. And then at the end of it, could you hand your piece of paper to the tutors, and they will add up and see what for the different numbers, how many people get them right. The proportion that get them right for the different length numbers. I'm going to start off with just 5 digits and then increase it. Ah. So we're going to test this hypothesis. Right, no cheating. Right, the first, should I do a first number? Okay, are you ready? I'm going to wait, read it. Don't write down anything. No cheating. No cheating. And then I'm going to count to 10. I don't want to put you off. And then you try writing the number down. Okay, here we go. First number is 69013. Right, now write it down, if you can. No cheating, just try to write it down. Cover it up, don't let anyone see. Okay, that all right? That was all right, wasn't it? Let's do something a bit more difficult. Okay, are you ready? Brain, engage brain. Right, this is 7 digits. Right. Constrict. 6814812. Right, write it down. Okay. Now, are the tutors, could you write down the correct answer? Because I'm not writing them down. Is someone writing down the correct answer? Could someone write down the... Maybe I should do that. Otherwise, we're all going to be not going to be... Unless I remember whose number they are. Yeah, okay. I'll write down whose numbers I'm using, so that's all right. Oh, you're a good piece of paper. Thank you. Great. Thank you. Okay, so 5, 7. Okay. Okay, right then. Well, Let's make it a little bit more difficult, shall we? Okay. This one's 9 digits. Right, are you ready? No. Focus. I'm sorry, I called this person by accident. Okay, no, I mustn't call them. All right. 7, 9, 5, 6, 1, 3, 4, 1, 6. Right, write it down. No, you didn't get it at all. Okay, I'll do that one. I'll do another one. Now, shush, don't laugh. You put everybody off. I'll do another one. I won't wait for 10 seconds for that. That's a bit unfair. I'll only wait for a few seconds. I'll do another one. Don't laugh. You put everybody, it'll just go straight out your brain like that. Right. Are you ready? Right. 0, 8, 3, 7, 4, 7, 3, 3, 8. Write it down. Okay, let's do 11 digits, shall we? This will be the last one. I think 13 would be really unfair. The idea of this, the claim, the psychological claim, is that there's a big difference between 7 and 9. That people, you know, can usually do 7, but find 9 very difficult. So that's what the main thing we want to test. So let's see about 11, because you're a clever lot. Okay, are you ready? Ready for 11. Eyes down for 11. Right. Right. 0, 7, 5, 3, 2, 1, 5, 5, 3, 7, 0. Go. Don't laugh. Now, have you got the right ones at the back? No, I'll write them down. Okay, no cheating. Just a minute. Okay. I think that's right. I hope that's right. Okay, how did you find? Could you hand yours in, please? Hand them in. You're not getting it marked. Don't put your names on. It's all anonymous. This is a scientific experiment. No special marks. Oh, but you don't know. Do you want to? I could tell you. I didn't tell you the right numbers. Oh, you don't know your own scores, do you? I should have given them to you. Sorry. Anyway. Right. Thank you very much for that experiment. So, by the time we do the practical, the data we should be able to give you is sort of out of what we want to know is for 5, 7, 9, and 11, if this is the proportion correct, between 0 and 100%, what do you predict? Where do you predict that? Like, where do you think for five? Where do you think you're going to be? Pretty up here? Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah. Okay, for seven, where do you think people will be? Way down? But how far? About there? Bit higher? Yeah, you're a good lot. You're bright. Yeah, I think seven. If that's 80, 60, 40, 20, I would sort of expect there. Now, what about nine? Quite a lot lower. Yeah, okay. I think this is the interesting, this is the one that people claim. People claim the mind can do seven things, but not nine things. That is the big difference. Somehow there's a big sort of difference. So this is where we might expect the big drop. And 11, where do you think 11? Down zero. Okay, so that we'll see. This is so what I want you to do is to do this and then produce intervals around these and to test the difference between that and that, whether there really has been a drop. So we will have these numbers, these proportions out of 50. This is out of, I think it's about to be out of 50 or 51 or something like that for these different ones. We'll have that. When you've done them, we could show them. Okay, right. Thank you very much. Always good to real data. Right. Okay. So how are we going to compare these? How are we going to compare two proportions? So let's say what we did in the past. We compared males and females whether they could roll their tongues. So we got the females as 14 out of 18, and men were 22 out of 31. Now, is this a real difference? You know, there is a difference observed, about 7% increase, but is that important? Can we conclude that women have a higher chance of rolling their tongues than men? Do you think that's good evidence? No? Why not? It's 7%. Why isn't that very good evidence, do you think? They're not equal, but it's not just that they're not equal. Difference is not very big. We've got to assume the data is really representative. It's the very, which we'll, that's what we'll be discussing about on Tuesday, about designing experiments. You know, you're not a random sample. But what's the main point about it? The crucial point is, how many, there's 49 people. Do you think that's a very good basis for drawing conclusions about the entire world? No. It's just that there's not enough of you. You're only a small group of people. You know, what I really mean is there's a lot of uncertainty about these proportions. About, you know, if we assume your random sample, you're not a very big sample. This is not a very big survey. It's pathetic, in fact. Absolutely pathetic. You know, we're not going to be able to conclude. Unless we see something very strong, we're not going to be able to conclude. So the way to arrange this is what's called a 2x2 table. So it's called a contingency table. It's the way to arrange these things. So we have 18 females, 14 can and 4 can't. We have 31 males, so 49 altogether. 36 can roll their tongues, 14 female, 22 men, 13 can't, 9 and 4. So we want to know, really, another way of describing it there's two ways to describe it. Are these proportions different? And another way to say, is there an association between tongue rolling and gender? Are they associated? So those two phrases are both used, association and tongue rolling. Okay, so how do we do this? What we do is to use this idea of a null hypothesis. What if there were no difference between them? The null hypothesis is of no association, i.e. equal proportions. What would we expect to happen with 18 women and 31 men if really the chances were the same for men and women? There were no difference. So the overall proportion is 36 over 49, which is about 74%. So in this group of people, 74% of people can roll their tongues. So applying this proportion to both the men and women, we would expect for females 18 times 36 over 49, we would expect 13.2 to be able to roll their tongue if there were really were no difference. Is that okay? Obviously there aren't 13.2 people, but it's just a mathematical expectation. Is that, is the calculation all right? And therefore we'd expect 4.8 not to be able to roll their tongue. Doing the same for the men, we'd expect, using this proportion, 22.8 to be able to roll their tongue and 8.2 not to be able to. Now you see what we've done with these numbers. These margin totals are still the same, are the same as the previous one. These numbers are all the same. But what's happened is that these numbers have changed, so they're both in the same proportion. The that over that is the same as that over that. So this is what's called the expected table. What we'd expect to see under the null hypothesis. And then we calculate, what we want to do is to compare that with that. So essentially say, does that look like that? Because if it does, it's not very good evidence against the null hypothesis. And now we come to the very simple thing, a chi-squared statistic. What we do is work through the cells, 1, 2, 3, 4, calculating this. You calculate the observed, this is the observed, 01, 02, 03, and 04. And these are the expected, E1, E2, E3, and E4. And we just calculate the sum, the square of the difference between OI minus EI divided by EI. Really nice, simple calculation. You know, I mean, of course, the program does it for you, but this is how to do it if you had to do it. So you would do 14 minus 13.2 squared divided by 13.2 plus 4 minus 4.8 squared divided by 4.8. Actually, all these are the same. They're all 0.8. 9. Oh God, I made a mistake. That should be 9. Oh dear. So, okay, I made an error in the calculation. I knew I shouldn't try to do it by hand. I've made a mistake. That should be 9. So this number is wrong. I thought it was a bit small. Okay. So I got it wrong. All right. So is that okay? But if you get it right, do you see how you do the calculation? And basically, this will be a big number if these tables look very different. Okay. What can we do? But how do we decide whether this big number is so big that we think that it's evidence? How do we put a p-value on this number? Okay, now I've got to go back. I'm going to do a little bit of generality. This is some general theory, which I'm not going to prove, but it's a nice bit of work. And again, this is when the people doing the Higgs boson, they used a likelihood ratio test statistic. Find that next week. They used it to detect the Higgs boson. So this is a bit of general theory. If you've got, under the null hypothesis, if you estimate the parameters, and there's p naught parameters, so this might be 1, 2, or 3, or something like that. If there's p naught parameters, that's the parameters that maximize the likelihood. And under the alternative hypothesis, let's say there's p1 parameters, which maximize that. What you do is take minus the twice the logarithm of what's called the likelihood ratio, the maximized likelihood. Now that will always be greater than that, and so this will always be positive, and that is called the likelihood ratio statistic. So we're not going to use this in its generality. I just wanted to introduce it for something. For people who are going to go on and do more statistics, this is a really important thing. Now, the theory, the nice theory, which I'm not going to try to prove, because I think I'd have trouble proving it, if H0 is true, this has got what's called a chi-squared distribution, on P1 minus P0 degrees of freedom. Now, why I introduced that is the fact that we're going to use this. We use this chi-squared a lot, like for the other one. And it's a special case of this general theory. Chi-squared P1. Okay, now, I've got to go even more deeper. What's a chi-squared distribution? Chi-squared distribution is, it's a nice thing. If you've got k independent normal variables with that shape, the sum of the squares of them has got a chi-squared distribution on k degrees of freedom. You don't actually need to know its formula. We don't use its formula much at all. That's the formula for the density. It's quite nasty, isn't it? Yeah. Is that right? I hope it's right. I got it copied it off Wikipedia. So it must be right. It's got expectation k. So this is the gamma function here. It's actually a special case of a gamma distribution, what's known as a gamma distribution. Variance 2k, standard deviation. So, and that's what they look like. Again, from Wikipedia, that's a chi-squared on 1 degrees of freedom. That's a chi-squared on 2 degrees of freedom. 3, 4, 5, 9. We don't even need to know its shape particularly, because we just use tables. We don't really need to know that. So the crucial thing is, when we do this for our table, when we calculated this chi-squared distribution, this is an approximation to the likelihood ratio test. And again, it's a bit messy to prove, but it's an approximation. Now, how many parameters are we estimating? Under the null hypothesis, there's just one parameter, the overall proportion. So P0 is 1. Under the alternative, there's two parameters, the proportion of men and the proportion of women. So P1 is 2. So the difference is 1. So this test statistic should have a chi-squared on 1 degree of freedom. Which, again, R will automatically do this for you. But I thought I should explain why it has 1 degree of freedom. Okay, so therefore the chi-squared statistic for a 2x2 table has an approximate chi-squared 1 distribution under the null hypothesis. Now this is wrong now, because I put the wrong numbers in. It's too low. So we should calculate the probability of getting a chi-squared 1 greater than 0.21, which it turns out to be 0.64. And we can use this function, p chi square. This is the value we're interested in. This is degrees of freedom. And this tells us that we're interested in the upper tail. So if we've got a chi square on 1 degree of freedom, looks a bit like that. So that's a chi-squared on 1. We've observed a value here, 0.21. We want to know that area. What's the probability of getting something as big as that? But p chi-square gives us this area. Unless we say lower tail equals false, and then it'll give us the upper tail. The upper tail. So this is quite big. There's no evidence that these men and women from this class, you know, from this data, we cannot conclude that men and women are different. 71% is not statistically significantly different from 78%. The numbers are just too small. So we can't draw any great conclusion from this data. It could just have been due to chance. It tells us these kind of differences there, this difference could just be due to chance. Does that sound all right? I mean, yeah. Well, we would want that number to be less than 0.05. Which usually is a chi-squared one of about 4. It's got to be about 4. for that to be 0.05. So you're looking for a chi-squared value of about 4 on one degree of freedom, and then you declare it significant. Actually, it's 3.84, I think, or something like that. So that's what we're looking for. That wasn't very interesting at all. Now, nicely, again, there's a lovely, the R function, if you want to do this all in one, prop.test will do the whole thing for you in every different way. It's really cool. This is a two-sample test for equality of proportions. It's got this continuity correction. So the data, this is how you put the data in. You put in the numerators, 14 and 22, and then the denominators, 18 and 31. So, okay, so I'm comparing 14 out of 18 with 22 out of 31. I'm not comparing 14 out of 22 with 18 out of 31. This is the numerators first and then the denominators. So make sure you get that right. And then it calculates a chi-squared statistic. It says it's 0.03, even less than I did. So they use a slightly different method and they get even less evidence. P-value very high. Not of any interest at all. But they do it the other way, which is to produce a 90, which we did it the way we did it yesterday, which is to produce a 95% confidence interval for the difference. Because can you remember, we did this yesterday. When we did it yesterday, we, on the board, Jeffrey got up and wrote it on the board, and we came to the conclusion that the difference was 0.07. That was the difference, and the standard error was about, not, can you remember what it was? It was about 2.5. We thought, God, that's really big, it's huge. And so that would mean that T plus or minus 1.96 standard errors is approximately 0.07 plus or minus 0.5, which is approximately, well, maybe we've got it wrong. Do you think we made a mistake? Because it's not that big, is it? I think we might have made a mistake. Because they get their 95% confidence interval looking like that. So maybe, because this is going to be far too big, this is going to be 0.57 minus 0.43, which is a lot bigger than this one. Oh, or did we get that as the twice the confidence interval? Yes, yeah, okay. So this was 2S was that. So then we get, that's better. Plus or minus 0.25, which is about similar to that. That's it. We get about 0.32 minus 0.18, which isn't far from that. Close enough. So we could have done it like that. You look at the confidence interval, it includes zero, so there's nothing there, nothing important. And it gives you the proportions and things. Slightly different p-value due to a slightly different method, but still with the same conclusion. Okay, so I think it means it's really easy to make comparisons of any proportions. Anytime you have data like that, you can test whether that difference is real or not, or whether it's just due to chance. Okay. Okay. So one final one on this then. Is that all right? I should say this stuff is, I think this stuff is difficult. This is the thing, I think the topic that people find most difficult in statistics. Yeah, sorry, yeah. I think I would usually trust the method in R because they use these continuity corrections. They're using a slightly more sophisticated way to do it. And there's even an option to calculate the p-value using a Monte Carlo method where you simulate, instead of using all these asymptotic approximations that we're using here, you simulate new data and you simulate the p-value. And then it will be most robust. If you see an option, if you really want to know the answer, there's an option to use what's called a Monte Carlo method, based on simulation, that does not use all the asymptotic, the large sample approximations. So that would be the best way. If it became really important. I mean, usually they all give roughly the same answers, the different methods. But if you really want to be, people will tend to use this one. And it's an option in here. You just put in Monte Carlo equals something, I think. So it'd be worth trying if you're interested. Just try it and it'll run. So I know it's very unsatisfactory that different methods give slightly different answers. But I think that's just because they're all different approximations. Okay, the final one, which we want to do, is quite nice. This is the months you were born in. Remember we collected this data? And only one person's born in October. And everyone's born in December. It's a very popular month, December. And we looked at it and thought, well, hang on, this is strange. Does this mean that people are really not born in June and October, and December's a great month for mathematicians? Can we make some big conclusions on the basis of this? Or is this just chance? So what do you think? Just chance? You think it's just chance? Okay, well, we can test it. That's the point. That is what we've been building up to. Now we can test it. And actually, it's incredibly, it's just, boom, one line. Very easy. What you do, first of all, that's just drawing the bar chart. Okay, this is it. Is there really a difference between the months? The null hypothesis is that there's 1 in 12 chance that any of you are born in any particular month. In other words, that this really just comes from a uniform distribution. It's equally likely. And that this up and down is just chance. Now, if this were true, there's 50 people, we would expect 50 over 12, 4.17. So this, if this was equal, they'd all be on 4.17. Now, they can't all be on 4.17, but that's what you'd expect. So the chi-squared statistic just goes comparing each of these with 4.17. And what you do is take the square of the difference of those lines and divide by the expected number. So these are the actual counts, 443442, there's October. So the chi-squared statistic adds up the observed minus the expected, 4.17, divided by 4.17. And when you do that, you get 6.8. Now, the thing is that big? If it was a chi-squared on 1, that would be very significant. So the crucial thing is, we've calculated a good statistic. What does it mean? What do we do with it? Okay, this is the neat thing. You say, okay, under the null hypothesis, there's no probabilities at all in the model. There's nothing to estimate. They're all a 12. All the probabilities are a 12. And the interesting thing is, under the alternative hypothesis, there are 12 probabilities, but they must sum to 1. So actually, there's only 11 different numbers that we're estimating. You see these probabilities of being in each of these must add up to 1. And so there's actually what we call 11 degrees of freedom there. There's only 11 different numbers that we're estimating if we allow all these months to be different. In other words, there to be every month is unique. So the difference is 11. And there's an 11 degrees of freedom. So you should compare this with a chi-squared with 11 degrees of freedom. Now, R does this automatically for you. You don't have to count this up. It knows. It's very clever. So what we do is then calculate the probability that a chi-squared on 11 degrees of freedom is greater than 6.8. But we know this has actually got expectation 11. A chi-squared on 11 degrees of freedom is going to look, well, we saw it, what it looked like. It'll look something like that. with that at about 11. And so 6.8 is not in the we're looking for something up here. And it's very uninteresting. It's very boring, indeed. There's no evidence there's a real difference between the months. This is completely chance. This is of no interest whatsoever. We should not get excited. This is exactly the kind of pattern we'd expect by chance. So, we've got all the tools set up to just test these things. And this is the kind of thing people test all the time. It's like, astrology, testing whether the month you're born in makes a big difference to your personality. People test these things. So, and the nice thing is you can, in R, you just set that as the table. T is the table of month, which are these numbers. So all I do, is give it this table, which is this table. Just do chi-square test, does it all for you. Cheating is, I should make you do them all by hand. Just does it all for you. Works out the degrees of freedom. Calculates it, they get 7, close enough. P-value 0.799, buff, no, of no interest. So really easy. Because the default is for it to test for a uniform distribution. So in this case, there are sort of lots of things you could put in there for different stuff if you wanted to test other models or anything like that. But the default is it'll just test for a uniform distribution and just gives it to you. So no, it's just chance, nothing there at all. Okay, we've done a huge amount this morning, a huge amount, had to get through it. And so any questions? Yeah, I'm sure you're... Oh, yeah, okay, we'll come on to that in a minute. Well, yes, because there is, I suppose what you'd say is that there is variability. I mean, the data do change. You know, there's fewer in October than December. What it's saying is that that is no evidence that the underlying chances actually are different from each other. You know, if we think of these as all just random variables, there's no evidence that these are not drawn from distributions with the same mean. In other words, what it is, if I asked, a million people, I would expect it to be exactly flat. There's no evidence that if I asked a million people, it would still look like this. You know, that this is a real effect, or a million mathematicians, or something like that. Yeah. So you have to think of this, when I say a real effect, I suppose I mean in a wider population. If we assume you are a random sample of something, mathematicians or something, there's no evidence that in the bigger population, they are different from it. These months are different from each other. Does that seem okay? No, you don't like it, do you? No. It's a very odd way of thinking. It's sort of backwards thinking. Yeah. Well, I suppose it's saying that under H1, there's all these months, January, February, March, April, like that. And H1 says that all these probabilities, probability for January and probability for February and probability for March, can be anything. H0 is that they're all equal to a 12th. H1 says these could be anything. But, I've got 12 of these, but you've got to be born in one month. So you've got to be born sometime. So these must add up to one. So there's only actually 11 different... If I tell you the first 11, I can tell you December. Because the probability for December is 1 minus probably January minus... Yeah, that's what that means. There's 11 degrees of freedom. 11 possible... I'm estimating 11 parameters. Okay, so what I've got is a practical... Where actually, there's a few things I want to show you. First, should we have? Have we got the results? Do we have the results? It's so exciting. Were we right? We do have results. Now, hey, what's the best way to declare these? Okay. So, first of all, let me write these out. How many people were there? Extraordinary. That's wonderful. Right. Okay. Out of 53. So, and this is 5, 7, 9, 11. And out of 53. So how many do you think got 5 right? How many?
Everybody.
Not everybody, no. 50. No, actually a bit less. No, it was 45. That's exactly where the point is, at 90, about 90%. Okay, how many do you think got 7 right? Oh, yeah, by the way, 5 was, if you remember what you put, it was 69013. And the second one was 68149812. How many do you think got the other one right? 20. Who said 20? Yeah, it was 21. So quite a big drop. That's about 40%. So really quite a big drop down to here. Right. Now the hypothesis is that there's a really big drop between 7 and 9. Well, how many think got 9 right? Who said 5? 5. Now I wonder who they were. Well done. Oh, that's very impressive. So big drop between 5 things. Okay. How many think got 11 right? No, 2. No, 4. That's incredible. I wouldn't stand a chance. That is really impressive. I should have done 13 just to really check people, but that is remarkable. It could, of course, could have been luck. I should, to test whether it's luck, I should have done a lot more, but that's really remarkable. If we keep the data, because we won't look at it now, but what would be interesting to know is these were the same people. Because these could be different people, or the same people. And you might conclude something differently. If it was different people, you might think it's more just luck. But if it's the same people, I think, whoa, they are a bit, top marks. So we'll look at, if we've still got the data, we can look at that later. But at the moment, we'll just look at these as if they're different people. And I want to test, I meant to check this. One of the questions I've asked on the sheet, on the practical sheet. The practical sheet, what I said is just try, you don't have to do them in this order. A lot of it is just rerunning the code that we put and maybe just changing some numbers. But you don't have to do them in this order. You could do them straight to the memory test. So that for the memory test, I want you to look at the proportions. Does there appear to be a trend? This is new. I didn't know what this would show. Is there evidence for a true difference between 7 and 9 digits? So, you know, are these significantly different from each other? 21 out of 53 was 5. Looks like, what's the p-value for that? Now, the other thing, and I don't know about this, and I haven't tried it, I would love to produce one of these graphics. You know, with the 3 or 4 data points with a confidence interval. And I'm not sure. There must be a package in R or a function in R to do that very easily. And I've no idea. So that's something I'm going to, you know, if people are interested, they could try to do that. And I'm going to try to do it myself, because I'm sure there is some nice way to do it. But otherwise, there's some standard questions. Oopsie. What's that? End of presentation. I don't want to end a presentation. Okay. I think there's some. The other ones are just I've given the code to changing the code and rerunning things and interpreting the answers. Okay, so if we do that, the other thing is I have given an assignment as well, which is really horrible. It's quite long, just because I didn't want you, I wanted to ruin your weekend. That's all. Yeah, it's, I think it does not. It looks worse than it is. It looks worse than it is. So if you could, and there's an optional one at the end, but if you could do this for Tuesday evening, that would be great. If you can send it in to Emma or somebody later, that would be great. But if it's any relief, that really is the, I think, the end of the sort of, in a way, difficult lectures, the methods lecture. We will be doing some more, but now, from now on, we're going to be looking at this stuff in the real world. We've got the tools we wanted. We wanted to be able to estimate, create confidence intervals, do hypothesis tests, plot differences, try to say, is this a real difference, or is it just, could it just be just chance? We've done all that, so now we can start looking at some real problems. Okay, is that all right? Yeah. So, right, thanks.